Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining me here today. I'm Mandy Rosniak of Inner Winning Coaching, and I'm glad to be joined today by Lori Fortuna, who I will introduce in a few minutes, and we get started. Hopefully, wherever you are, it's a little bit warmer than it is here. I know it says spring on the calendar, but it doesn't quite yet say spring on the thermometer, so I'm sure, like many of us out there, we're waiting anxiously for that warmer weather to come. And I want to apologize up front, fighting a little bit of a cold here, so I'm hoping the coughing will hold off. But in the meantime, I will apologize up front in case I have to excuse myself. So again, thank you for joining me, Mandy Rosniak with Inner Winning Coaching. And I'm very excited about having you join me here today. We've got a very special topic that we're going to get into, and I'll explain that a little bit more in a moment. So just to tell you a little bit about myself, as I said, my business name is Inner Winning Coaching, and if you want to find out some more information, you can get that at coachmandy.com. I also have a page on Facebook at Inner Winning Coaching, and I'm also on Twitter at Life Coach Mandy. And the work I do is primarily with athletes, helping them bring out their best so that they can excel both on and off the field. But I also work with a lot of people just in general in regards to life transitions, which is a perfect segue into the topic we're going to be getting into today. As I think all the time, we're not always ready for or sure of when a life transition is going to be coming at us, but they're happening all the time. And whether it's a life transition of going from high school into college, a college into the real world, someone maybe looking to make a career transition, relationship transition, or as we're going to get into today, talking about what happens when you've lost a loved one. So, you know, again, I primarily work with athletes, but I do a lot of work with people who are not athletes who are just looking at and working on life transitions and helping just sort of set a direction for themselves in their future. Excuse me. I'm very happy, like I said, today to be joined by Lori Fortuna, who I'm welcoming to the show and happy to have with me. She was a fellow classmate of mine at IPEC, which was the program both of us went through for our coaching, and done a little bit of work with Lori, and was very excited to be able to get her on the show here today, not necessarily via the topic, although we do feel we're going to try to bring a lot of positive light to the topic. It's just the experiences we both had that sort of give us that foundation for what we're talking about here today, which, like I said, after I introduce Lori, I'll explain a little bit more. But I'd like to introduce Lori and let her tell you a little bit about herself. So, Lori, welcome to the show.
Mandy, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. As Mandy said, she and I were classmates at IPEC. Gosh, we graduated in 2010. It feels like just yesterday, but it's been, you know, four and a half years now, almost 4 years. So basically, from that perspective, I'm in the midst of creating my coaching practice right now. I also do transformational work with folks. I focus mainly with women. Usually in their mid-30s on up, who basically tend to focus on everybody but themselves. And I think we probably know all of, you know, at least one or two people in our lives that do that. And I help them start to focus on themselves and start to achieve some of the dreams that are important to them. So as I mentioned, I'm in the midst of starting to create my coaching practice. So I don't have, my website is still in the midst of being constructed and all of that. If you need to reach out to me or would like to reach out to me, I'm more than happy to have you do that. You can send me an email at Lori, which is spelled L-O-R-I, at LoriFortuna.com. So it's Lori at LoriFortuna.com. And I, you know, if you have any questions or would like to connect in any way, feel free to reach out and I will get in touch with you and we can have a conversation about it.
Well, great, and thank you, Lori, and like I had mentioned earlier, and it was great what you just said about it feels like just yesterday, because it does. you know, we had we came out of the program, and I think like anything that people go through, you know, you come out and everybody, you know, you try to stay in touch right away, and like you and I, we sort of reconnected just this past year, and even though it had been a little while since we had talked, it was that feeling of like we had just, you know, talked yesterday. So I think that's one of the great things about the connections that we make through that program and those similar experiences that we have. And like we said, it's you know, both a blessing and a curse a little bit of as to what's brought us here today. Because our topic today is going to be getting in. I wanted to do this show as sort of a tribute to my father, who just recently passed away. As a matter of fact, it'll be a month ago tomorrow that he passed away. And I wanted to get into talking about, you know, discussing, you know, what happens to us when we go through a loss, but then also what we start to do and looking at how do we then look to, you know, live life to its fullest with no regrets. What are the things that we can learn from a loss? You know, what are the steps, some of the steps or things that we need to do for ourselves? And just so sort of just in general, how do we take the loss of a loved one and use it as a way to grow, to honor their memory, and to, you know, move forward in the rest of our lives. So that's why I wanted to do this show here today. And I'm joined by Lori. The reason why I asked Lori to join me here today is because, and I'll let her tell her story in a moment, but I know she had just had a passing of her grandmother about 8 months ago, who she was very close with and was, you know, had lived with her and taking care of her right up until the end. So very, very similar experiences in regards to that aspect. So it's the reason why I wanted to bring Lori in here. And so just to tell you just very briefly my story, and then I'll turn it over to Lori so she can let you know what her experience was. My father had dementia, and he had been diagnosed with that. You know, it's funny you lose the timeline, but 5 years ago, I would say. But looking back, we know he had obviously been suffering from the disease probably a little bit longer than that. And so he had been, you know, he had dementia, and he was going through all the stages. And, you know, he was at the end stages of on the dementia scale. And everything, you know, body-wise, he was healthy. Mind-wise, obviously, there was a lot of issues going on there. And the body was declining. And he was at a point now where he was, my mother and brother, he was still living at home, which we were very fortunate for. And he was now needing full care in regards to he was no longer able to do anything for himself, but yet he was still able to go to adult care on a daily basis, which was good for him for the stimulation and all those things, the whole nine yards. So in that regards, that was good. And the unfortunateness to this, and this is what sort of also brought on wanting to have this discussion today, is he was going through this, you know, steady decline, and like I said, basically healthy, you know, good heart rate, good, you know, blood work, all those kinds of things. And unfortunately, he was basically fine on Thursday, had a, you know, good day, went to bed, woke up the next morning with pneumonia, and unfortunately had passed 24 hours later. So it was a very, very sudden situation right at the end, which was obviously very jarring for, you know, myself and my family, because even though you know inevitably something like that's going to come, you just never know when it's going to come or any kind of timeline for it. And one of the things I've discovered is there's really nothing that prepares you for that when it finally happens. And, of course, after that happened, it makes you you take that step back and you start to look at, okay, where am I in my life now? What do I want to do moving forward? And how do I want to honor both the memory of my father and then also myself in regards to moving forward? Because it's that question of, all right, now I want to be able to see where I am and what do I want to do moving forward. And so that was, again, the purpose of today's topic and show. And so that's a little bit about my story in a very quick nutshell to let you know of the reason for wanting to do this today. And I'll let Lori tell you a little bit about her story and as to what she experienced and introduce, you know, her situation. So, Lori, please share your story with us.
Thanks, Mandy. Yeah, so my grandmother, when she came to live with us, was 90 years young. I mean, and believe me, she was 90 years young. Definitely lived that, which was to be 6 years this year. But and she ended up living with us for the 5 years and passed away last August, as Mandy had mentioned. When she moved in with us at 90, other than the fact that she just, you know, her body, you know, couldn't do the things that she used to be able to do. There was nothing wrong with her. We just were concerned that she needed to, you know, she wasn't driving any longer, and we were just concerned that, you know, we wanted to make sure that she was cared for and she had somebody nearby to help her with things that she could no longer do. And for probably about two and a half years, that continued. And 2.5 to 3 years in, she got a really bad case of the shingles, which was the beginning to, you know, just her progressive deterioration of health. She really never got rid of that pain. And then about a year and a half ago, she was diagnosed with rectal cancer. And so, it's kind of interesting from a standpoint that, you know, Mandy, you say you're never prepared. And, you know, people would look at me all the time and say, well, gee, she's 95. You know, I would continue to say to them, you know, she just was, I think she had more than 9 lives, to be honest with you, because she just was a really tough cookie. She just, you know, the doctor would, you know, say that this is going to happen, and she just, you know, far surpassed whatever it is that they said that was going to happen with her. And very similar to your situation, Mandy. You know, we really thought that she'd probably be with us until the latter part of last year or even sometime into this year based on, you know, some of the prognoses and how her health was progressing. And she went into the hospital because her vitals were a little weird one day on a Thursday, and they were doing tests on Friday, and by Saturday at 7:30 p.m., she wasn't with us anymore. And in my head, yes, did I know she was 95 years old? Absolutely. But you just are never prepared. And she was a person in my life that, I often told people that I was the luckiest person in the world, because my two most favorite people I lived with every day, it was her and my husband. And ultimately, at the end of it, you know, I've had her for my whole 47 or 48 years of my life, and, you know, it just still wasn't enough. I felt a huge, huge loss, as I know you're experiencing right now as well. So very, very interesting how you try to prepare for a loss of somebody, and you're just never prepared, you know. You just never are.
Absolutely, and one of the things that you said about, you know, her being very strong and, you know, fighting and things like that, it's, you know, it sounds like if the two of them haven't met up in heaven, maybe they'll run into each other, because that was, I think, one of the things with my father was he was very strong, and we always used to joke he came from very strong, strong genes, because both my grandmother and grandfather, who actually came here from Poland and had a very rough life, actually made them probably, you know, gave them that toughness. And so when he was fighting the disease, I guess you can't even say fighting the disease, because one of the things about dementia that, and in learning this, and it was kind of ironic, because shortly after he had passed, a new study had come out that most people, it doesn't get documented that they pass or they die from either Alzheimer's or dementia. It's usually some other thing that they end up dying from. Yet ultimately, because it's the brain that sort of controls so many of the functions within our body, it actually is the disease that sort of then breaks down the body and things of that nature. And he had just, you know, been through it. And the biggest thing I can always remember when I would run into people and they'd say, you know, how's your dad doing? And I always found that to be a very difficult question to answer, because the answer was never going to be he's getting better, because it wasn't a case of something that you're going to get better from. I found myself starting to give the answer be, well, he's still with us. And I'm happy to say he's still with us and he's still at home. And, you know, it's interesting, as I haven't really thought about that much until, like, right now as I'm talking about it, that in a lot of ways it's almost, you know, it's a very difficult thing to have to try to answer because, like I said, you don't get better from this kind of a thing, and it's only a steady decline that ends up happening. But again, as I was saying, the disease was progressing, but yet he was still healthy. He had actually probably about 2 weeks before that, a week and a half before that, had been in the emergency room for something, but they didn't find anything, and yet everything came back, and blood work was impeccable. I mean, my mother and I were talking in the hospital. We should be as healthy as he was in regards to those things. But yet when it was time, it just went so super fast, and as you know, you've already alluded to, and I've said already, it's you just never prepared for that. And so, you know, so in that, you know, Lori and I actually talked the other day, and we were saying, geez, we should be recording this because we talked for quite some time about some of the things here. We maybe have touched on it a little bit, but Lori, I just, you know, want to ask you, so what did you experience and feel after the loss that you did not expect, and what has it taught you as you've, you know, been moving forward?
Wow. I would say, you know, I mean, all the things. I had lost my mom 12 years ago to cancer. So, and we've lost my father-in-law unexpectedly. So, you know, I kind of, you know, was expecting the sadness. I would have to say the level of sadness with my grandmother. I think every person I've lost so far, I can only speak for me, I've experienced it completely different. It never looks the same for two people. And 25 years ago, I lost my grandfather, my grandmother's husband. So basically, and experienced it completely different there. So, you know, I'd say that, but the thing that really, really was an aha for me was all of the learnings that it was almost like I was taken up to a 30,000 foot view, and I was able to just almost experience my grandmother, not as close to her, and so many things came into perspective as to why certain, you know, she did certain things. The learnings that, you know, it was just amazing some of the things that I just learned. I mean, one of the reasons why I'm focusing in my coaching business on what I am is that during the process, you know, especially the last year of her illness, I was that person, to be brutally honest. I was on that gerbil wheel of craziness, and between working full time and caring for her full time and everything in between. And luckily, I had a great support system with my husband and my mother-in-law that helped with that. But ultimately, one day I woke up and for a while I had been saying, "Oh my God, I'm going to start running out of hours in the day," and I started to realize, you know, that there's got to be more to life than this. And about a month and a half before she passed, I finally ripped the Band-Aid off and resigned from my position at work, which was one of the hardest decisions I've ever made in my life because, to be very honest, I was identified by that role. You know, that really was who Lori Fortuna was, or so I thought. And I left, and I, you know, was, you know, able to spend the next month and a half. I thought I would have, obviously, as I mentioned earlier, a lot more time with her. But we spent so much time talking about things. And even in those moments that we were talking, I didn't get that lesson until after she was gone. And it was so cool. It was like someone gave me the Cliff Note version of what she was trying to tell me. Gifts that wouldn't be an amount of money in the world that would be, you know, you could pay for those types of things.
Well, and I think it's great that you are also able to be open to see that too. I think that's a really, really key piece, is that when you're going through something that's, traumatic, because it is a loss, whether it's expected or unexpected, as you and I discussed the other day and are acknowledging even now, it's no matter no matter whether it's expected or unexpected, it's still a, you know, a trauma to ourselves, you know, both physically, mentally. But to be able to be aware and open to sort of see those lessons for yourself or to experience that, because I think sometimes people may be shut down and then aren't open to be able to learn from what is now happening here because we don't want to feel the pain. Or maybe we don't want, you know, we want to go into sort of a little bit of that survival mode because we have to carry on, so we kind of shut it off, and then we maybe miss something such as that, like you just shared with us, which is so cool that you were able to experience that and be open to it.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, just one thing, it was a silly thing that popped into my mind, but, you know, just to give you a little bit of background. So my grandmother grew up, I mean, at two years old, her mother left, and her father really wasn't in a position to take care of her. So she literally, we filled out a legacy book, in the last couple of years of her life, and she literally lived in 12 different places before she was 10. And some of them were orphanages, some of them were family members that would take her and so forth and so on. So needless to say, that was one of the main reasons why, because she was so good to me my whole life, that there was absolutely no way she was going to start her life in homes and orphanages and end her life in a facility as well. Over my dead body, I said. So, but what was funny is that one of the first thoughts I had was, I finally understood, like when I used to go visit her, you know, after I got my driver's license and stuff, I'd go up to visit her at the house, and my grandfather had passed even before he passed. I could have spent 5 hours at the house visiting her, and I would get in my car to go leave, and she'd be like, "You're leaving already?" And it all kind of came full circle for me in that she, like when someone left her, I think she associated it deep down inside with when her family, you know, she lost her family. And it hurt,
right?
You know, maybe not to the degree of that, but like she always, like, you know, my mother-in-law would be here to, you know, when I traveled for work, and she'd say the same thing to her. My mother-in-law would feel so guilty. She's like, is it okay if I leave and go back to my house? You know, because she just, you know, and she didn't lay it on thick. She just would say, oh, you're leaving, right? Because she always, you know, with people she enjoyed spending time with. I mean, I often told her she'd talk to a tree if it would talk back. She was a very sociable person, and ultimately, it was, you know, just like even little things like that that might not seem that significant to somebody else. It was like, that's where that was coming from. You know, it's just kind of cool.
Right, right. No, that's a great, you know, again, a great awareness and revelation to be able to experience that and honor her in doing that, like you said, as to sort of be able to keep her there and do that for her. For sure. And I know for me, the thing that kind of came, showed up for me was the fact that I had noticed, and this became very apparent, was, you know, again, we knew eventually, you know, and inevitably this was going to happen. And there was no talking about as to when, because he was just such sturdy stock, as we would say. But I hated seeing him suffer. You know, when my mother and I would talk about the fact that we hated seeing him suffer, because one thing I hadn't mentioned is he had vascular dementia, which is different than Alzheimer's from the standpoint of Alzheimer's, you lose all that memory and that recognition, things like that. But he didn't lose any of that, but what he lost, and one of the first things he lost, was his verbal communication. So early on, his ability to speak really, really got affected, and you start to lose timelines, but probably for the good, at least last 6 months to a year, pretty much wasn't talking basically at all, because basically what happened is if you would ask him a question or ask him something, the thought could be there, he would have the answer for you, but the brain couldn't make the mouth work. So by the time he was then trying to go give the answer, he couldn't, you know, that couldn't happen. So unfortunately there was that lack of communication. So, you know, it was that sense of, you know, you saw him suffer, and you could see that. So this was maybe just our interpretation that he was suffering. But, you know, when you know someone as long as you do, you know, and you just look at them and you look at their quality of life and things like that, all the best care that could be given to him was being given to him, but it had to be tough to not be able to communicate and things to that nature. So we would talk about, you know, hated seeing him like this because we just could tell it was tough on him. But what I discovered and learned through this process was when we then lost him was my realization was as much as I hated seeing him suffer, at least I got to see him. And now it was the blow of, but now I don't even get to see him. And that was, to me, was kind of the biggest piece from the standpoint of seeing him even under the conditions that he was under meant more than now not even being able to see him. Now, I don't know if that would be classified maybe as a selfish kind of thing, because in a lot of ways it probably was, because I know he's in a much better place now. But that for me was the hardest thing, was just knowing that now I don't get to see him anymore. Even though in a lot of ways I had, quote-unquote, lost my father, you know, slowly over time, he at least, when I'd go visit, you know, go to the house, there he was. So that was probably the hardest thing, you know, and the big hardest thing that, like, and you and I talked about this before, and is that's where there's no playbook. There's no playbook that tells you how it's all going to be and show up. And so, you know, we just, you know, you and I talked the other day, and we know it's important to sort of care for ourselves after the loss because, as we've said, there's no guidebook. But what did you feel you did really well, and what did you feel you may have rushed or didn't give yourself enough time for after, you know, after the loss?
Well, my husband, I have to say, I literally looked at him after the funeral, which was on a Thursday, and, you know, everybody had gone home, and we were just, you know, it was just he and I, and I gave him a big hug and started crying and thanked him for the beautiful gift that he gave me, because he was my biggest supporter and encourager to leave my job. And knowing that I didn't have to go back to work on Monday was huge for me. You know, she lived with us, as you know, as I mentioned. So, you know, we have a two-story house, so we had a stair lift and grab bars everywhere and all of that. So for the next, you know, September, really through the end of the year, I just leisurely took my time every day because she made me promise her that we would, quote-unquote, put our house back together so that it looked normal. It really bothered her. She thought that she, you know, turned our house upside down. And to me, it kept me sane knowing that she had things to help keep her safe. But it bothered her. So we took all that down, which obviously required plugging up walls. And so essentially, you know, most of my house got repainted in that time period. And I just took my time. And it was very therapeutic for me. It was almost like, because, you know, we were heading into the winter season, almost like if I was out gardening, which I enjoy doing. I mean, gardening and playing in the dirt is very therapeutic to me. So, you know, there were days that I'd be, you know, painting a wall, and I'd just fall apart, and I let myself. You know, I think I shared with you the other day that, you know, when my mother passed away, because we found out that she had a terminal illness a couple weeks after my husband and I got engaged, and I was trying to, quote-unquote, as silly as this sounds now, control my grief. So I signed up for a hospice bereavement group, and I'm like, I'm going to get ahead of all this stuff. And you know what?
Right.
After we got married and after the holidays, I fell apart again because, you know, you just, every single experience, you just deal with it in your, you know, it just happens as it happens. And, you know, so I think because of, you know, at this point I've lost, you know, like I said, the three or four people in my life that I have that I was close to, I've basically gotten to the point where I just allowed myself to be and basically let it happen. And I'm not done. I'm sure I'm not done. I have my moments. They're less and less. You mentioned, you know, talking about, you know, feeling like you were selfish because you don't see your dad. And I agree with you. I thought about it a little bit differently, but every day I got to get hugs from her, and not having those hugs anymore is horrible. But, you know, and I consider that my selfish side of me. It's, you know, I really miss her and that, and just having her. She just always gave me inner strength. She was my number one supporter. And, you know, if I had something really crappy going on or even something good, I mean, she just always celebrated and she always encouraged when I needed encouragement. So to not have that, but ultimately be in a situation knowing she's not suffering anymore because the last several months were horrible for her. They really were. And, you know, knowing she's in a better place and she's now with my mom and my grandfather and you know, many of her friends that have passed, you know, I try to shift my thoughts quickly to that, but it's hard because when you love someone as much as, you know, I love her and you love your dad, it's hard to just let go. You know, I mean, the only thing that makes me feel a little bit better is I truly know she's with me every day, and I feel her with me, and I try to focus on that, even though she's physically not here anymore.
Right, right. No, and that's a great sharing and insight there. And you know, I know for myself, this makes it be a little tougher because I'm still sort of in the throes of it. So, having there be such a shorter amount of time, I will share one thing in regards to for our listeners as to sort of maybe take a note of is in regards to taking the time, because I will, in full disclosure here, I went through, you know, the after he passed, you know, took that week off because, and the funny thing is too, when I say take that week off, anybody who again has gone through this, that wasn't a vacation. That week was, I did not work. I worked a little bit from home, but even though I didn't work, that was probably one of the busiest weeks I've ever had in, you know, a long time. Because each day there was something or some phone call or, you know, some arrangement you were having to make. And, as a total side note, without getting into, because we could probably do a 3-hour show, both my parents had actually done had pre-planned funerals. So in that regard, a lot of what had to get done was done. They had done this like 10 years ago. As a matter of fact, after he got diagnosed, because that was about formally 5-6 years ago, but there were signs, but they had gone and done this. So in that, there was a lot of things actually we didn't have to take care of, and yet there was still so much to have to take care of. So anyway, as I was saying, the point being is so that week between the funeral, I was not at work, and I remember saying afterwards, I said, because, you know, of course, everybody is, you know, tells you take as much time as you need and all these kinds of things, and unfortunately, I'm sometimes you know, I push myself a little harder than I should, which is why I'm so good at working with people on life transitions, because I know some of the roadblocks and hurdles that people can run into. But it was just the fact that I outwardly said, I know I should be taking a little more time right now, because right now it's all fresh. And it's kind of one of those things that because people know about it, they fully expect you to not maybe be there. You know what I mean? They expect you to take some time and some things like that. And I remember just saying out loud, I know I should be taking more time right now because of the space I'm in, so that I really can process and just, you know, get some extra rest and all that kind of stuff. Because 6 weeks, 8 weeks down the road, however far down the road, if I don't do it now and it hits me, maybe people aren't going to be as understanding because, well, you know, well, why haven't you gotten over it yet? You know, that kind of thing. So needless to say, unfortunately, I did not take enough time. And I am paying for it a little bit now with I've been fighting a cold and things such as that. So my lesson and my little verbiage out to the world is just absolutely, absolutely take care of yourself. And I'm even saying this to myself, and I'm being as mindful as I can. I am in one of those situations where some of the activities I have going on, and I'm not saying this from a martyr standpoint or an aspect of, oh, if I don't do it, there's no one to, but it's The types of activities I'm involved in, I'm the primary person. I do softball, private softball lessons, and things like that. And so there's some activities that if I'm not there, there's not that other person to pick up, you know, to do it. So I am, like I said, in the throes of sort of learning this process right now. I will probably could report back in 8 months as to the what I could have or should have done maybe a little differently and what did I learn through the process. But I am very conscious of the fact that I probably have pushed and rushed back through a little too quickly. So maybe we'll reschedule a show in about 8 months and we'll check back in and I'll tell you where I am. But
well,
I think those are some great insights that you shared.
Yeah,
yeah,
well, and I think it's funny that you're saying that, because 8 months from now you'd think, you know, you're talking, you know, you meant, and I don't know if you meant it this way, but ultimately I'm in it that long. I bet you in 8 months I'm going to have just as many insights, because it's still a process. I don't think you ever get over losing someone. It just, you know, I think time heals it so that you figure out a way to embrace the change and just deal with, I call it the new normal, you know, not having them
right.
Physically being here. You know, one of the other things as you were talking, you know, I would definitely suggest to the listeners is surround yourself with people that will support you. Because if you don't have that, it makes it harder. It really does. It really does. Having people support you, whether it's before the person passes, if you're dealing with someone who's dealing with an illness, you know, I got to tell you, my support system kept me sane. I mean, because it's really hard, as you know, to watch someone you love deteriorate, whether it's due to age, an illness, or both.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's there's no way to know how you're going to be with it as you go through it, because like you said, it's a new normal, it's a new process, it's an everyday you wake up and you know, I think it's a little bit sometimes, you know, when we're kids we don't, you know, we take so many things for granted and we think in our lives everybody's going to be here and then you get, 'cause that's one of the things I've noticed for myself is I'm fortunate enough to say that I didn't suffer a lot of loss in my life in regards to deaths, things like that. I did lose an uncle when I was very young, almost too young for me to, I mean, I didn't really even understand, you know, almost too young for me to even remember. Same thing with one of my grandfathers. And the losses I have had, this is the first, how do you say this properly, the first closest loss I've had. This is the closest loss I've ever had. And there's no way to prepare for it. And it's from that standpoint of it kind of finally came to me that, like, wow, you know, you do realize, like, you do look at life a little bit differently, because you start to, I think, look at the mortality of life, and you start to look at okay, so you know, what does life mean? Where, you know, how did their lives, you know, how did me being a part of their lives affect me? And now, what can I do with that moving forward? How can I now honor them moving forward? So that, as you and I know from our training, we talk about it, and sometimes people might say, well, how could you even, you know, that's almost a morbid thought, but how could there be any kind of a win-win opportunity here? How could there be an opportunity from someone's death? And there can be, because the opportunity can be, and you alluded to this a little bit earlier without saying it this way specifically, but it's what can you learn from them being a part of your life that you can now use moving forward to enhance and grow and now make your life go in and maybe same direction, different direction. You know, what are you going to do and how are you going to look at it differently now? Because it is the new normal, and there are going to be different things showing up in your life. So now how can you take that and create something positive from it? Because you could go into the depths of the you know, feeling bad and all that stuff's going to happen and show up, but it's a case of, do you want to get, you don't want to get maybe stuck there. You don't want to get stuck in a place that, and this is where I guess I was alluding to when I said about, you know, honoring their memory. To me, I feel like it's good to honor someone's memory by now enhancing what you can do with your life, and taking those life lessons you've learned from them.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm just realizing now, if I apologize here, to take a quick moment, if any of our listeners want to call in with a question or comment, the number is 646-716-9397. Again, that's 646-716-9397. And I apologize for not sharing that earlier. I just was so excited. I was excited to get into this topic because you and I had talked so much and knew there was so much we could share. And I want to go back to what I just said in a quick moment here, but I also just need to let our listeners know of some of the upcoming shows we have. Life in Radio, as I've learned doing this, is promoting the other shows we have coming up on Life Coach Radio Network. And what we have coming up is going to be on Monday, March 24th at 8 p.m. We have Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen. Then on Tuesday, March 25th at noon, we have Fund to Fortunes, Entrepreneur Startup Success with Coach Jeff. On Thursday, March 27th at noon is Walk Your Talk with Leanne. And then on our Life Coach Chat channel, one of our sister stations, on Wednesday, March 26th at 8 p.m., it's all about reinvention. And then on our other sister station, the International Life Coach Network, tonight, March 21st at 8 p.m., we have Balance Life with Fit, Neuro-Linguistic Programming, which is also known as NLP at Work. So those are some of the shows we have coming up. Lori, just to speak a little bit more, we were talking about the honoring, honoring their memory and things like that. Something else you and I got into the other day, talked about, and I thought it was an important piece for us to get into. What are some of the issues that can come up also from a death, maybe within the family, or otherwise maybe seem to have been dormant, but now that this life-altering event maybe starts to stir the pot, or was there anything you experienced or anything, I don't know if there is or isn't, but I think that's always just sort of a question is, was there anything you noticed outside of your life that in the passing maybe something came up that maybe, like I said, had been dormant for a while or anything you noticed?
I don't know that it was dormant. It was essentially happening throughout the illness. Her illness, I should say. I mean, the interesting part about it was that I'm noticing, and even with my mother's illness, I knew it. Noticed it a little bit too with certain people. It's almost like when someone's sick, or if they're nearing the end of life. I think certain people, I don't know if phobia is the right word, but basically they don't know how to handle it. So, for example, my brother was very close to my mother, and he came to visit her when she was sick, but you could see that he definitely distanced himself. I think he was trying to prepare himself and protect himself, for lack of a better term. And with my grandmother, he actually had a fight with her right before she moved up to live with us, and he hadn't spoken with her for the last 5 years. So it was really an interesting dynamic. So he basically kind of, I've watched him distance himself, with a few people that we knew were heading to the point where we would lose them, eventually. And then, my grandmother has a living daughter and a family, and as she got sicker, it didn't seem like that mattered. They'd call, my aunt would call and periodically check in, but when she got diagnosed with rectal cancer, which was really the first significant illness that we knew that was going to eventually probably take her life or contribute to taking her life, didn't come up to visit, didn't come to see her, didn't really make any additional efforts to see if she needed anything. And I think the sad part about it is that I don't know, had I not gone through it, I probably wouldn't have understood what in my case a senior needs, because my mother passed when she was 58 years old. But I think that it's kind of sad, because ultimately I don't think people really realize just how much more they need support. I mean, it can be something simple like they can't open a jar anymore because their dexterity issues are there. I mean, we had special knobs on all the lamps in our home so my grandmother could turn on a lamp, because you can't pick, special things so she could get her toothpaste out. You know, I mean, there are a lot of things that older people need that, you know, if you don't live with them, you don't see it. And for someone who is a tough cookie, like it sounds like your dad was and my grandmother was, when someone showed up, they perked up. And basically people thought that they were just fine, you know, and it isn't until you live with them and see that. So, like, for example, before she moved in with us, we'd go down and visit her. She lived on the other side of the state. So, you know, we'd take an hour and a half drive down to make sure she was all right, do chores around the house, help her out, whatever. And we do that once a month. And, you know, when we got down there, oh, my God, I think she was great. If she came up, we'd have her come up for a couple of weeks at a time to stay with us to kind of make her start to feel comfortable living here, because we knew that eventually we wanted her to come live with us. When she lived, it was amazing what we saw with her living under our roof, because she couldn't pull the wool for 2 weeks straight. Just couldn't happen.
Right.
So it's just, it's interesting. I mean, the moral, I guess the moral of the story is everybody reacts differently to things. I think through the whole process, I just learned to accept whatever it was going to be. For a while I got upset because I think I almost took it personally because I didn't have anybody from my family helping us support her. You know, no one really ever called and asked and said, hey, can I help? You know, my aunt lived a few states away, so it's not like I was expecting her to be here every day. But, you know, even just emotionally, you know, because, this woman was just so important to me. And, one of the morals was probably maybe I needed to ask more. Maybe I needed to ask for help. And not everybody just offers. So that could have been part of it as well. But I just got to a point where I, accepted and appreciated what I did get, and what I didn't get, just it was what it was, and tried not to let it impact me, because there were too many other important things to focus on at the time.
Right, and I think something that you just shared that's so ultra important is, and as soon as you said it, I chuckled a little, because I was like, wow, I would have forgotten this. But it was such a great point. And I think this is something for people to really connect with if they're at all going to be going through, a similar process, more so when somebody's dealing with a long-term illness, is when you don't see someone on a regular basis, and you're not an active participant in their care, your perception of their your perception of how well or how sick they are, I don't know the right way to phrase that, but your perception of where they are is going to be vastly different than the people who are there on the front lines and doing it on a daily or regular basis, or if you're there on a regular basis. And I think the piece I think wanting people to take away from this is if you're I've got about five thoughts running through my mind. First of all, people do process things differently. And because there is no guidebook and there is no way to know how to do it because you're just in it, is the fact that people do, you know, they, I think they go into denial, they go into shutdown, they don't want to believe what's happening is happening. And we make choices every day in our lives. And understand, if you're the person who's making the choice to not be a part of the process, not be a part of the caretaking process, and it doesn't mean necessarily having to do what you did, because, you know, that was your choice to do that, but maybe your choice is to you come in, or like the example you said, you went down before your grandmother lived, you went down there once a month. So maybe once a month you come and you do the caretaking for that day, or something to that effect. But try to understand with a little bit more of an open mind that when, if you just come and visit, the perception of what you're going to see of that person is going to be vastly different than the potential seriousness and level of where they really are. And understand that those choices you're making as to whether or not you're going to participate is your choice. Now, it's interesting, you brought up the point about maybe you could have asked for a little bit more help, which is a great awareness on your part, right? And maybe you could have. It's water under the bridge. And yet at the same time, it's also a case of, well, maybe someone on the outside could have also offered. And it's not about getting into the semantics here, but it's speaking again more to, though, if hopefully people can take a real look at where they are when they're going through this with someone, and maybe they can acknowledge and admit that this is super hard on them, and going and seeing and being a part of the process even a little bit more is too difficult for them. But I think the key here is you have to have the conversation, because you as the caretaker, and for me it was my mother and brother who were on the front lines every day. I mean, I made sure I got over there every week to at least 10 days. And trust me, I'm having issues with feeling like I could have done more. And I know I was there a lot and pitched in a lot of ways. But it's about communicating, about having those conversations, because you as the caretaker, when you're in it day in and day out, I think sometimes it's hard to ask for that help because you almost don't even recognize that you might need help or even want help, because it's just what you're doing. It's your routine. But it's the people who are on the outside, and maybe unfortunately they don't even have their own awareness that they're maybe not in full acceptance of what's going on, to even you know, ask those questions or be more of an active participant. So I think it's that fine line, you know. But the point I was making for people if they start to go through that is, if you're the primary caretaker, maybe you try to have the conversation, but it's not necessary, you know. But and yet, if you're the person who's on the outside, you know. Take a look at yourself. Take a look at the part that you're participating in, because I know we've had some similar experiences in regards to participation and sense of awareness as to how bad it was. I think there were some family members that had no idea my father was as sick as he was. And when I say sick, meaning from the levels of dementia, like how much he had actually deteriorated, because they would be there for, you know, they wouldn't be there, or maybe they thought they stopped coming because, well, he doesn't recognize me anymore. Well, you don't know that he doesn't recognize you because he can't talk, but trust me, I know he still recognized us. When I walked into the hospital room on that, you know, his last day, as soon as he saw me, tears came out of his eyes. People learn to communicate in different ways, and the nice thing was is by being a part of it and being there, we got to know and learn what the ways he could try to communicate. You know, so again, as we sort of brought up some of, you know, the things that can get stirred up within a family, you know, I think this is one of the things that can happen, is that there can be some things that now, new dynamics. You know, we've talked about the new normal now a couple times, but there's also now potentially new dynamics that get created within a family because of how the various members dealt with it or didn't deal with it throughout the whole process. And I think that, you know, as you move through and you're in this new normal, that's going to be a whole nother next level to where you are moving forward. And can sometimes be a very difficult dynamic moving forward because you're suffering over the loss of the loved one, and now you're having to deal with maybe some of these family dynamics that have only come up because of actually the loss of the person. So,
yeah,
I think that's
and I know
another. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you were done. I and it's funny because I think I mentioned to you that, I mentioned this to you the other day. I mean, I actually thought that I was, you know, the only one that had, you know, I guess we can call them family issues, you know, where everything wasn't Brady Bunch-ish. And it was funny because I, you know, really, you know, my focus was to, you know, keep her as pain-free as possible. And then once she passed, make sure that, you know, she pre-planned her funeral as well, but to, you know, to make sure that everything got carried out the way she wanted it to be and so forth. So my focus was really on that. But it was kind of funny because, you know, as things were coming, like I didn't know, you know, there were certain people I had no idea if they were coming to the funeral or whatever, and as I'm, you know, meeting with the funeral home, you know, they're asking me questions, who's in the procession, all this, and I'm like, I wish I could tell you, they're like, don't worry about it. If you had any idea of the stories we could share. It seems like that's kind of the norm, and to be honest with you, it made me feel a little bit better, even though I wasn't focusing a lot of my attention on it at the time, because she was my priority, but, you know, it just felt like it felt good knowing I wasn't the only one that had some weirdness going on in my family.
Right, right. And it's interesting because through this whole thing, in some of the conversations I've had, what I have determined, and I don't, this is not like breaking news, but what I have absolutely determined, everybody has, and I don't mean to say this, this may come out a little not how I mean it, but it's almost like everybody has that person, or they're, or has that dynamic. I haven't talked to one person yet who hasn't had some sort of an awkward family dynamic in there, just as, you know, you've shared and just as some of what I've experienced. I mean, even the morning of the funeral, the priest had asked me a question, and I said, well, I don't really know the answer to that question. I wish I could tell you. And he just looked at me and said, don't worry about it. He goes, I had the same issue in my family. And I thought to myself, okay, well, that's good to know that even the priest has, you know. But I think, you know, again, a takeaway for people listening is to understand that the family dynamics are going to come up, and they're going to come up in ways that maybe you could never have imagined. And if you're the person on the front lines and you're the one who's in there getting your hands dirty, your perspective is going to be very different than the person on the outside. And just understand everybody's going to have their different perspective, and you can do what you can do. You're making your choice, and they're making their choice. And yeah. I think when you're the caretaker, this is sort of my take a little bit, is when you're the caretaker and you're like I said, you're on the front lines, you're already doing a lot of caretaking. And probably you're not taking enough care of yourself in that regards. And so in there, I don't feel that it's then your responsibility to have to then try to take care of the outer members of the family as well, because you can only do so much caretaking as you can do. You're making your choice, and they're making their choice. And you can try to have the conversations and the communication, but you can only go so far with it, because as we know through our training and learning and things like that, that, you know, we all have access to making choices. And sometimes when we decide to not make a choice, even that in itself is a choice. So,
yeah, and I think, you know, and I think the other important thing to think about too, if, you know, is the caregiver, if you're having if you're having any of this, you know, weirdness, as I call it, within the family, also know that each person deals with grief differently. So they might be feeling guilt or whatever it might be, and needless to say, you might, you know, you as the caregiver could potentially be the recipient of the anger and the guilt that they're feeling for some reason. So, you know, as hard as it is, you know, try not to take it personally, because it may feel like it's all being directed at you, or a good chunk of it is, but, you know, they're dealing with their grief and their guilt and anger in a very different way than you probably are.
Right, right. And I think, again, that's just the hardest part is when you're now all in the situation, you're all going through a loss, and just, I guess, don't compound it by then necessarily pointing fingers or things like that, because it's only going to add to, I think, the grief and the dynamics. But just understand that stuff is going to be there and will show up for sure. I think we've clearly defined that every family has discovered that something like this shows up somewhere, somehow, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, one
yeah.
thing's for sure, I was I fully anticipated that this conversation was going to be a very fruitful one, and which is why I scheduled a little extra time here. But we do need to start wrapping up, even though I would love to keep talking. I feel like there was just so much more we could talk about in regards to, sometimes it's the you lay out what the show is going to be about, and I feel we've done a good job of that, of helping educate people of what it's going to be like going through, sharing some of our experiences. But maybe the last thing to address here is, what life questions or changes have you made since that time, or are you planning on for yourself as you move forward, and as we talked a little bit in to continue to honor your grandmother's memory and to use this, what you've learned, to now enhance your life or to make changes in your life as you move forward?
It's actually a pretty big transformation, actually, because as I was evolving and learning, as I left work, cared for her, and then since she's been gone, one of the things that I realized is that during this entire time, I lost sight of me. I so lost sight of me. So I put me aside and completely forgot about me. And so really the biggest piece is, that I've been learning and very, very happy about is realizing, I used to always think that if I, people said, oh, you need to take care of yourself first, almost the oxygen mask theory. When you're on the plane, you got to put the oxygen
yep.
mask on yourself, then somebody else. And I used to think, oh, how selfish, I couldn't do that, because my mother and my grandmother were both always taking care of everybody but themselves first. So I had two great role models, so I did a great job following them, but obviously not taking care of myself. And what ended up happening as I started to try to focus on me and taking care of myself, I started to realize that gave me renewed energy, so I had more than enough energy to do for the people around me that I love, that I want to do something for. So I want to keep in memory of her, because it was really the transformation and the evolution through, the last, several months of her life and into her passing and even now that she's gone. Because as I said, I really feel like she's kind of sitting on my shoulder, or she's in my heart all the time. So I know that if I don't, she's going to be whacking me in the head, because she's keeping an eye on me. She's keeping an eye on me, and I,
right.
And I know that she was always really worried about me with the hours that I put into work and all of that. So I'm really trying to keep, not only focused on myself, but also, really keeping a balance to how much I put into work, and so that I'm enjoying life just as much as I'm, enjoying the work that I do.
Yeah, and that's a great share and a great lesson for yourself that you've taken from this, which is you've took the step back and made those observations, and to use that, utilizing moving forward. And I also believe part of it too, and you mentioned this in the very beginning, but just to sort of reinforce it also helped you take that step back and realize the job, the career you were in, although you were very successful at it, it wasn't really where you were wanting to be. And you also took that step to now follow that true passion for yourself.
Yeah, and that was a really, really big choice. It was something that I wanted, but I was so fearful. I mean, part of it was, oh my God, I won't have a paycheck every, you know, and I had taken steps ahead of time to save some money and that type of thing so that it, you know, that it would be, you know, it would take us through, because I had no idea how long she would, you know, she was going to be sick. But ultimately it was pretty scary. But I think at the end of it, you know, if you don't go after the things that are important to you, and this is a big lesson for me. I mean, I'm still trying to fully embrace this. But if you don't go after it, you're never going to experience it. You know, it might take you a little while. You might, you know, fall down and scrape a knee along the way, but you can get yourself up and pick, you know, great leaders are, how quick can you get back up and rebound and move toward your, you know, move toward your goal. So ultimately, if you don't even try to attain that goal, you're never going to have an opportunity to experience that in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's that case of, as we know, sometimes, unfortunately, we make our greatest strides, we take our biggest risks or steps forward when something like, you know, something like this has happened. And so, you know, great for you to have taken that big leap and going for something that, you know, you've really wanted to do and, you know, are now going for it. And, you know, it's interesting because I've had a sort of a similar situation in regards to, I had been feeling very, what's the word? Just itchy. I think itchy was the word. I think the thing I was kind of explaining to some people. I was just sort of feeling like something just hasn't been quite right. Very busy, you know, building the coaching business and doing the coaching business. And I do private softball lessons. And I do something over here. And I got something over there. And you know, I got multiple irons in the fire. And what I was discovering was, having all these irons in the fire, I had lost a little bit of my vision and a little bit of my purpose and where I was wanting to go, because I absolutely love doing the life coaching, and I really, really enjoy doing the private softball lessons. And for those who don't know, I coached college softball for 20-plus years, so that's where my passion for softball comes in. But I had basically just started to just load, you know, I continued to load the ladder, I guess you could say, and I got to be being more busy than I was being productive, and I had, you know, way too many things on my plate. And to be quite honest with you, one of the things I also noticed after his passing was I had a momentary sense of guilt where I felt really guilty, because it was almost like I had gotten so busy, I had created so many obligations for myself that I then didn't maybe get to go visit as often as I had been. So now it was maybe every 10 days instead of, you know, like once a week or things like that. So for me, what this has really done for me is it's almost been like that wake-up call of, okay, you've gotten back more on the, I like to call it that, I've gotten back on the treadmill of go, 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 without really taking a look at, you know, what am I doing because I want to, and what am I doing because I have all of a sudden decided I have to. And it became very apparent that I had gotten a little off track. And now I'm revisiting all that of like, okay, you know, it's time to just to take that step back and do that reevaluation. Because it's that I added another thing and I added another thing and I added another thing without really focusing on the fact that all these things had been adding up, and you talk about the self-care, I had totally forgotten to leave any space or time for myself, and started to really, you know, get depleted. And so for me, moving forward, I'm in a space right now where some of my obligations, and I'm all about fulfilling commitments and loyalty and all those things. In a perfect world, there was a few things I would have liked to have walked away from immediately, but they're seasonal type commitments, if you know what I mean. Like there's an absolute end time frame for it. It's not an ongoing thing. There's a start time and end time, and I'm going to fulfill those commitments and things like that. And then I'm going to do that similar thing of that, take that step back and be like, okay, you know, the full force efforts are for your coaching, because that's what I just love to do the most. And reevaluating and establishing the absolute priorities, because there is that place of, and you had said, you know, you had done a little work, you'd save some money, but that absolute fear of that paycheck, you know, not maybe not coming in every week. And that's one of the things that I had experienced is I started, you know, I was making my decisions being driven for the wrong reasons and realizing that I was getting further and further away from my passion and further away from where my, you know, I feel like my gifts are and what it is that I, a little more my sense of purpose. So I know for me moving forward, that's one of the things I'm going to be really focusing on over the next few months and just continue to move forward is to really, really establish that, okay, you know, what are your priorities? Let's really get those defined. What are your passions, which I know what they are, but let's clear the path so you can be, you know, keep moving forward towards those passions and purpose and jump off that treadmill, you know, because I was actually very, very surprised, and I think this is what happens to people, and this would be a great topic for another show, but here I am in this business of helping people create their lives and these plans and things, and I hadn't even realized, oh, my goodness, I had gotten, I think you mentioned earlier, the hamster wheel. I had gotten on my own hamster wheel and almost didn't even realize. I was so busy helping everyone else, I had gotten a little off track myself. So that's, for me, I know what I'm going to be looking at and focusing on as we move forward. And in that, to honor him, because I know one of the things about him is that he was always worried. You know, he was always, like, making sure I had enough of, you know, enough to eat, enough over here. He was the, I get absolutely, you know, that caretaking aspect from, you know, both my parents, but that's what his role was, you know. He was, you know, I always tell the story about when I was in college and he'd come to my softball games and it was cute because he'd give me like this little half hug and a little handshake. And in the handshake was a pack of dentine gum, which we made sure we got some to send off with him. But dentine gum and a $20 bill. Because he would always like, make sure I got, you know, make sure you got enough, you know. So anyway, and so in that, he was always, you know, he was always wanting to make sure that everything was okay. You know, like, are you okay this? Are you okay there? So, you know, that's for me. How I looked that I'm going to honor him and then honor myself is I'm going to now really take that solid core look at, okay, what is it that I want? And then be okay with going after those wants and be okay with following that passion. Because I think as you've learned and we know from, you know, that cognitively we know you really only going to get that true sense of fulfillment and excitement and things like that when you really do like tap into what your passion is and allow yourself to follow it and allow yourself to share what it is that you know love to do with other people and realize that when you clear enough space for that the things that you need to survive because we do need to pay our bills and we do need to you know do things like that will show up for you when you create sort of that clear intention and that clear path. Otherwise, when the path is cluttered, it's hard to maybe you know get to where it is that you're working towards because your energies are pulled in so many different directions. So
yeah, it's so true. And I have to say, and I know I didn't share it on this call, but I did with you the other day. I mean, don't beat yourself up too much about, you know, putting so much on your plate because I truly believe, I'm not a grief expert, but I do believe that is, at least it was a coping mechanism for me. So, like, when my mother passed away, you know, I was, you know, I mean, I just kept busy. I mean, I remember after the services, you know, her and my grandmother lived together, and we had a hospital bed there, and we had to clean up and all that, and I had, you know, a little less than a week before I had to go back to work, and you know, I turned into the Energizer Bunny and cleaned the house and did all the stuff and got ready to leave my grandmother and with her home back intact, and then you know came up and did you know I became the Energizer Bunny all the way around. I think you know mainly to mute how I felt. And ultimately,
right.
You know, over time, I realized that that's what I did. And unfortunately, I've had, some other losses in there too. So I'm a little bit more aware. But, I think the biggest thing that I try to pay attention to is how my body feels. So, like, if I'm, you were talking about some things that you absolutely are passionate about and some things that you're not so much, I pay attention to that. And if it's not serving me and making me jump out of bed every day, I mean, I'm not saying that, there's things in life that we have to do because it just, go to the doctor, go to whatever, that aren't exciting. But ultimately, if it's something, that isn't, making, aligned with me, my values and the things that are important to me, I rethink it and it probably, in most cases comes off the list unless, there's a darn good reason why it should stay on the list.
Right. Right. And that's a great, I think that'd be a great place for us to end all of our great shares today, because I think that was a great summary for people to take walk away with. I purposely planned to have us have the extra time and time for I think such an important topic that doesn't quite get talked about enough, because I think and you and I talked about this the other day. It's not necessarily the first topic people want to run to and have, but I think it's a very, very important conversation and topic to sort of discuss a little bit more. And I think it's only though after you've gone through it that you can then understand that. And so now that's where I feel like you and I can help give back a little bit, because this conversation we're having would have never come up until I got here. And so if we can, with a lot of what we've shared today can help anyone, prior to maybe getting through the process, like we said, because there is no guidebook, but just understanding maybe what may be coming and that what you're feeling is normal because it's all normal, because there is no right or wrong in how you're going to feel and go through this process. And yet I think the biggest thing is, like you said, we just try to stay aware, give yourself the time and space if and when you can. And if you can't or haven't, or you feel you've done enough and somewhere down the road it shows up on you, just let it happen, because there is no right or wrong in how to go through this whole process.
That is so for sure.
And, Lori, I'd like to, again, thank you for joining me here today. And if you want to sort of maybe give us any it was such a great last little nugget. I don't want to now, say to you, so can you give us one last little nugget and put you on the spot? But, maybe any last little piece, and then just also remind people how they could get in touch with you if they'd like to, reach out to you and talk to you more about this or anything else moving forward.
First of all, Mandy, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed myself, and I really think, as you've said, it's such an important topic, and it's awkward if you haven't been through it. People don't know, and ultimately, to have a forum to hear some tidbits and best practices or just things that people have experienced, I think is helpful. So, thank you to your dad would be proud, and thank you for including me on in this really important show. I appreciate it. I would say that the last tidbit that I'd like to leave everyone is more in the caregiving stage of things and more with elderly folks, probably more with the elderly folks. I think, whether you're the immediate caregiver or someone in the distance, maybe you don't live right around the corner, so you can't get there all the time, do your research, even if it's an illness, do your research and really try to understand what that person's going through, because one of the things that I realized pretty early on, because we've been dealing with my grandmother for quite some time, even at a distance, really since my mother died 12 years ago, is when people get older, their brain starts to deteriorate, you know. And one of the things that, you know, I heard from, you know, a lot of people, my brother being one of them, he used to complain all the time that my grandmother complained all the time. She never said anything positive. And that wasn't necessarily true. She did, but she did, you know, like if she went to a restaurant, she would complain about something or whatever. And that is part of the aging process. You know, just like the dexterity issues that, you know, elderly have and all of the other things that they have. And I've experienced people getting really frustrated with them, thinking that they're almost like they're intentionally not doing what they should be doing when they're just not capable of doing it anymore. And it's just sad. I mean, I've often said that it's God's sick joke to leave someone with their mind intact and let all of their, you know, their functioning, you know, deteriorate because they know what they need to do. They know what they used to be able to do, and they're no longer able to do it. So just, you know,
right.
Try to do your homework and understand where they're coming from as much as you can to make their, you know, because think about it. If you couldn't do something starting tomorrow, how bad you'd feel and know that you'd never get better and never be able to do that again. You know, so just, you know, try to understand that because I know that it can be really a real big challenge. And a hit to their self-esteem. You know, it really was hard for her to, you know, my grandmother especially, to know that, you know, something as silly as, you know, squeezing a tube of toothpaste, you know, or something like that. I mean, it really was a hit to her ego because she knew how much she used to be able to do. So
right,
that would be my
right.
That would be my last tidbit, and then I think you had asked me to just share it once more. So again, my information to get in touch with me is Lori at LoriFortuna.com. So it's Lori spelled L-O-R-I at LoriFortuna.com. And again, thank you, Mandy, for having me part of the show. I really enjoyed myself.
Well, and thank you, too, for such great insight and for sharing, you know, your personal story with all the listeners and myself. It was a lot of great stuff. And I always find, too, when I go back and listen to this, and so for anybody listening, it is being recorded, so we'll be able to listen again. I always get so interested. We listen to it again, and the stuff that you pick up on that almost you don't even realize you even said or heard when you were listening to it the first time. But just also to build on something you just said right there, because it was a little piece of what I was alluding to earlier when you said about, you know, learning about the disease and things like that. I think what can sometimes be the hardest part is when the person gets into that, you know, that illness, or they start to be in that deteriorated state. We want them to be the person as we knew them at their maybe their strongest or their brightest or their, you know, when they were most impactful in our life, and yet they are no longer that person, maybe physically, but they are still there as that person. And I think that is probably the hardest part, is to being able to watch the decline and watch some of the things that they no longer, as you said, that they no longer can do, be a part of who and how they are, and that this is their new who. And it can be very difficult to watch that, because, like, you do want them to be who you knew them to be as, but just understand that who they are and how they are and can be a part of, you know, part of the illness. And just literally, you know, I heard this so many times, and now I'm going to say it, roll it off my lips as well, is, you know, cherish the moments you have and really, you know, take in the time you have, because as I shared earlier, to me, I hated seeing him suffer, but now I don't even get to see him. So it's that's been the hardest part. Is I'm actually, after the show here today, headed to go to my parents' house, as I will always continue to call it. And it's hard. It's hard still walking through the door and having him not be there or not be coming home from the adult daycare for the day. So, you know, that's just the thing, is just cherish the time you have, and when the unfortunate time comes that they're no longer with us, just take care of yourself, take care of those around you, and, you know, just honor their memory as we've shared here today. So, again, Lori, I really want to thank you for joining me here today, And also just want to wrap up a little bit as to, again, the shows coming up on our on Life Coach Radio Network and our sister channels. We have on Life Coach, the Life Coach Radio Network, this Monday, March 24th at 8 p.m., Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen. Tuesday, March 25th at noon, we have Fund of Fortunes Entrepreneur Startup Success with Coach Jeff. Then on Thursday, March 27th at noon, Walk Your Talk with Leanne. Followed by the Life Coach Chat Channel, Wednesday, March 26th at 8 p.m. It's all about reinvention. And then tonight on the International Life Coach Radio Network, so that's tonight, March 21st at 8 p.m., Balance Life with Fit, Neuro-Linguistic Programming, NLP at Work. And again, you can reach me at Mandy, that's M-A-N-D-Y, at CoachMandy.com. So that's Mandy at CoachMandy.com. My website is CoachMandy.com. I'm also on Facebook at Inner Winning Coaching and also on Twitter at Life Coach Mandy. So I will be on, my next show will be April 4th. So I look forward to having the listeners back with me on that day. And again, Lori, I really want to thank you for such a great conversation today. And I would have to say there's maybe a couple of topics we brought up today that, that could be some great future show topics. So I'd love to have you back on in the future.
I would welcome that. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, great. And everyone go have an awesome rest of the day and a good weekend. And if for those of you out there who are like me, I'm going to be spending a good portion of my time when I can get to it watching March Madness, big college basketball fan this time of year. And whatever it is that you're interested in, make sure you go out there and do some of that this weekend. And have a great weekend, and I will see everyone on April 4th. Thank you, and take care.